I have a problem. Most ministers have this problem. At least most Unitarian Universalist ministers have this problem. Here's the scene. I'm at a party, and there are a lot of folks I haven't met before, so I strike up a conversation with a new friend. And as always happens in such a situation, new friend finally gets around to asking, "Well, what do you do?" And I know what's coming. I'm retired. And every now and again, that's enough. But most often just leads to the next question is, "Oh, you're retired. What are you retired from?" And I think, uh-oh. I'm a Unitarian Universalist minister. "Oh," new friend says, "Unitarian Universalist. What do Unitarian Universalists believe?" Well, I haul out my elevator speech and try to be as neutral as possible, and sometimes that even works, but most often it just leads to a barrage of further questions like, "Well, what about the Bible? Well, what about Jesus? What about the Holy Mother?" And I can see the 500-pound gorilla entering the room. Here it comes. She's getting close to it. Wait for it. "Well, you do believe in God, don't you?" Now, there is absolutely no way to answer that question short of a short course in theology. She thinks she's asked a straightforward question, but she hasn't. She's asked a very complicated question masquerading as a straightforward question. And if you'll pardon the expression, God save us from such questions. I mean, the word God itself is so ambiguous that it just practically doesn't mean anything at all. Which God are we talking about? The God of the Old Testament? The God of the New Testament? The God of Jesus? The Jewish God? Calvin's God? Martin Luther King's God? The Muslim God? The Hindu God? Or one of them, anyhow. Well, surely a short course on theology is not appropriate for a Sunday morning, so don't worry about that. But maybe a micro course will do the work. So I will outline what I think, I believe temporarily for the time being, at least until tomorrow afternoon. And in true Unitarian Universalist fashion, I'll start out with what I don't believe. But don't worry, I'll get around to what I do believe eventually. Just hang in there. I do not believe in any kind of supreme being. I don't even understand what that would be. As I look over the list of things that exist in the universe, you know, sealing wax, cabbages, kings, neutrinos, maybe, a few other things, the 10,000 things, as the Chinese might put it, I can't see for the life of me any hierarchy there at all. They're just the things that exist, the things that are. How any one of these could be superior to any other of these things just utterly escapes me. Unless, of course, one admits that we're simply projecting human values onto the list. But if that's the case, the hierarchy is not in the universe, it's in us. And that means the hierarchy turns out to be different from one person to another and from one culture to another. Nope. No inherent supremeness at all. No supreme being. And therefore, I do not believe in a God that has human characteristics. I do not believe in a God that wills, gets angry, watches over us, gets jealous, judges, loves, hates, gets bored, or anything else. These are all just projections of what we do that are made onto what we neither understand nor comprehend. The problem, of course, is that to communicate, we have to use language. Now, don't misunderstand. I love language. Use it all the time. I almost wanted to say some of my best friends are languages, but I won't go there. Languages, though, have limitations. Language was invented to talk about things. So imagine the problem of naming, nouning, if you will, God. Nouns pick things out. For example, a ball. A ball is a small, round object that's light enough to pick up and play with. A ball is not a toothpick. So when someone says, Jane picked up the ball and tossed it to Dick, we know that she did not pick up a small, light piece of wood used to clean the teeth. But what would the word God pick out? It can't pick out anything because there is no thing that is God. Now, don't jump to a hasty conclusion here. I'm also not an atheist. I'm not suggesting that God is nothing at all, just that God is not a thing. And so you can't name God. The word God is not a noun like the word ball. This is why the Torah forbids us from uttering the name of God. God has no name. To name God would be making a thing out of God, and so an idol. Naming God is idolatry, not to mention futile. So, you may well be asking, what kind of word is God? The Buddha once said that his teachings were simply a finger pointing to the moon, and only a fool would confuse the finger with the moon to which it points. The word God is a finger. But to what does it point? And that's the real question that is the start of the short course in theology. And this is also why the use of the word without some kind of common and shared understanding leads inevitably to nothing but confusion. So here is roughly what I'm talking about. The story begins way back yonder in the early 60s, back east, which is somewhere east of Pittsburgh, when I was 16. For several years before that, I'd had a number of, peculiar experiences that are very difficult to describe. They were as if the edges of things were slowly dissolving. And I found them scary, and so I resisted them. And then one day in the early spring when I was 16, there was a thunderstorm. And being an inveterate lover of thunderstorms, something I miss in Santa Barbara, I walked out into the ends of it, and off to the east, there were still dark storm clouds, the remnants of the storm. But to the west, there were these huge clouds rising very rapidly, and they were reflecting the setting sun, the light on back onto the earth. And this beautiful golden yellow color all over everything. Eventually, the clouds reached a limit and couldn't go any higher, and the night fell suddenly like, I don't know, a hailstone dropping. And the birds quieted, and the crickets and night frogs took up the night chorus with hardly a change in the level of sound. And I walked out into this, and once again, the edges started to melt. But this time, for reasons that I'll never know, this time I opened myself to it. And I just can't explain what happened next. William James, in Varieties of Religious Experiences, calls such an experience ineffable. I felt something that I had never felt before. I felt a peace, a serenity, an acceptance descend upon my soul like, well, to use E. Cummings' phrase, snow everywhere descending. And remember Wordsworth? The breath of this corporeal frame and even the motion of our human blood almost suspended, we are laid asleep in body and become a living soul, while with eye made quiet by the power of harmony and the deep power of joy, we see into the life of things. At the center of this serenity that embraced me and folded all into a unity, I felt a presence embracing me. Embracing me. And then I knew something that I had never understood. I knew that no matter what happens to me, be it good, be it filled with pain, I am embraced by that presence. It is always with me. Bidden or unbidden, it is always with me. Wherever I go, whatever I do, whatever happens to me, through the dark night and the bright dawns of my soul, that presence is with me. Wordsworth again. A presence that disturbs me with the joy of elevated thoughts, a sense sublime of something far more deeply interfused, whose dwelling is the light of setting suns and the round ocean and the living air and the blue sky and in the mind of man. A motion and a spirit that impels all thinking things, all objects of all thought, and rolls through all things. This is the first time I've had that experience. 57 years later, it is as fresh in my soul as if it happened yesterday evening. I've had others since then, some less vivid, some equally. A few years ago, I had a very short dream. It consisted of a voice saying one thing. Go thou peaceful in the world, for I am with thee. What is this presence that I experienced? In the sense of science, I have to say I don't know. Because science studies and describes the world of things, the nameable world. This presence cannot be named. It can only be pointed at. But there's another sense of knowing besides the knowing of science. This is the sense that the Bible describes as you shall know the truth and it shall set you free. This is knowledge as healing rather than as description. It's the sense in which Wordsworth saw into the life of things. It's the sense in which the Christian asserts, I know that my Redeemer liveth. It's the sense in which the Buddha knew release from suffering. This is how I know presence. So, to return to my new friend in the party, you do believe in God, don't you? Well, I choose not to use the language of God because it is so fraught with confusion. But I do believe in that which is not of this world, but without which there is no world. I believe in that within which we are all infinite, because we are enveloped in it. I believe in a presence which is the anchor of my purest thoughts, the nurse, the guide, the guardian of my heart and soul of all my moral being. Is that God? You decide. Having experienced presence, I find the question irrelevant. Oh, but I do believe in that silent black cat.